Hello friends, we will now discuss chapter number 5 of the book International Finance. And today we are going to discuss about Indian economy. Of course, my very first slide, I am showing you the entire picture of what constitutes our Indian economy. And you will find that this whole gamut, somehow the other, directly, indirectly, will be now discussed. Question is, why will we discuss Indian economy for international finance? I'll come to that at a stage. Let's see the topics that I'm covering now. First, we'll discuss what is economy, understand economy, and then go to Indian economy, which was prevalent at the time of independence of India, 1947. It has evolved over a period of time. The next step was the liberalization process of the economy in 1991. That was a very crucial stage. And we'll go to the sector-wise economy prevalent in India. Of course, we cannot go without the understanding the impact of COVID-19 pandemic on the economy. Not only world economy, but Indian economy also. And above all, we have completed 75 years of independence. Let us look at the Indian economy at 75 and then try to understand the future outlook of our economy. It is only when you are able to understand the Indian economy you will be able to judge and understand on what direction you want to take as far as your imports and exports are concerned, as far as the international trade is concerned. First of all, let's look at the definition, an expanded definition. Economy is related to the production, sale, distribution, exchange, and consumption of limited resources by a group of people living within that area of the economic sphere. And the management of those resources is used to satisfy the needs of the people, the needs of the businesses, organizations, and also the government in that area. Without these factors, no economy is possible. It is a set of processes that involves its culture, technological evolution, values, education, history, legal system, social and political structure, and mainly natural resources, which are acting as the main factors of the economy. Not only Indian economy, I'm talking about generalized economy now. It has changed over a period of time due to the technology which produces intellectual property and changes in the industrial relations. Mind you, today, an intellectual property, that is something being created by the mind, has become a factor of production and it adds to the economy. Innovations, new products, services, process, and expanding market, diversification of the market, niche important markets. These are all the factors which give a push, which increase the revenues as far as your economics are concerned. There are different sectors of economy. Basically, there are three main sectors of economy. Today, our modern economies have created or gone into, I wouldn't say created, I would say they have classified the economy into three sector model phases. One is primary, secondary, and tertiary. These are the three sectors of economy. Primary means basic. Basic form of economy is it involves the extraction and production of raw materials such as corn, coal, wood, and iron. That is anything coming out of the earth, whether in the form of a farm produce or in the form of a mine produce. Mining also. These are primary forms and they become the primary form of economy. Secondary. Secondary involves the transformation of the raw material or intermediate materials into goods. That is the manufacturing, like manufacturing of steel into cars, textile into ready-made garments, or any form of manufacturing or processing goes into the secondary sector of economics. When you look at tertiary, this is known as a service sector. All types of services. This involves the provision of services to consumers and business. Maybe babysitting, banking, your household services, any form of service activity without movement of goods will come into the tertiary sector or service sector of economy. These are the three basic stages or phases of economy. We have to look at the importance of each of them. Any country, they will always have certain indicators of the economy. What constitutes the indicator? That is GDP. The gross domestic product of a country is a measure of the size of economy. GDP is a measure of the size of the economy of that country. The most common conventional economic analysis of a country, it relies on economic indicators like GDP and GDP per capita. Now, what is GDP? GDP is total production in the form of goods and services. That is production of out of all these three sectors of economy, a total production constitutes the gross domestic produce. And GDP capita, that gross domestic produce divide by the number of people in that country, by the number of citizens of that particular country, constitutes GDP per capita. Real economy again is used to denote the part of the economy that is concerned with the production of goods and services. Ultimately, the produce which is always there in the primary stage, that is not the real economy unless and until it is produced and serviced, then you get real economy out of that. Farm produce, as long as it is lying, agriculture produce, as long as it is lying over there, has got no economy unless it is moved by the other two services. The study of economics is roughly divided into macroeconomics and microeconomics. These are the two different forms of economy, macro and micro. Examining the economy revolves around the social science of economics. But it may also include sociology, history, anthropology, and geography. These are all studies which is included in the to understand economy. What are the indicators of economy? Fields related to any human activity like production, distribution, exchange, and consumption of goods and services are business, engineering, government, and healthcare. These are all indicators of economy, movement of economic forms. Inflation in consumer prices is measured and tracked so that problems in the economy can be pinpointed. Inflation means that same item, you have got to give a higher price for that. Inflated prices of the commodity are inflated due to various social or government causes. So inflation in consumer prices is measured and tracked so that problem in the economy can be pinpointed. And of course, all of us participate in an economy. Everybody, each and everybody, including a child born day one, he starts participating in the economy. Of course, we cannot rule in a hermit who is living on a desert island. He does not participate in the economy. He does not move certain goods and services at all. Every individual and family in the community has a contribution to make as far as the economy of the country is concerned. We are all economic movers. Understanding any activity that you undertake are a form of economic movement. And in return, each of us expect a share of the goods and services provided by other members of the community. When we give something, we expect something also from others. So all of us are sharers, givers and takers amongst ourselves. And that is a movement as far as economy is concerned. Go back to 1947. Let us go back. Before 1947, we were all slaves to the British government. They were ruling on us since a very, very long time. And India became independent from the British rule on 15th August 1947. And at that time, we had hopes of making the country self-reliant in economic and political terms. First of all, we wanted to be independent to form our own government, and we wanted to be independent to formulate our own economic movements without any interference from any foreign government in any form. That was the hope created during independence. And at that time, I know you people who are the young generation now, you could not visualize what was our condition. All our rich heritage, our produce, our raw material was being systematically transferred to UK, and they were converting it for their usage and again giving it to back to us at a higher cost. Resultant was there was total abject poverty over here, stark illiteracy as a result of deindustrialization by the Britain. And we found ourselves in the middle of a socio-economic crisis. You know, at that time, India-Pakistan was created, and there was a havoc, mayhem, murder here and there, movement, gross movement of population, a certain level of population from one end of the country to another end of the country, because there were two countries created, and movement of people going to a particular country or coming to a particular country. It was a total mayhem, total poverty at that time. And immediately after that, we went through a worst drought in the history in 1960. We had to depend on Western countries for food and grains. Wheat, our main food, was being imported from America. And what was the quality of wheat that was coming to us? The wheat that they were throwing away for their animal field was being imported to us. And we, because of the abject poverty at that time, we were consuming those as our staple diet. I cannot even describe the condition. Yes, I was born during that period. Before 1947, I was born. And subsequent years, 1960, etc., I have faced all that, I have seen it. But always remember, when you have a crisis, it gives you a focus in life also. And this crisis has led to focus on self-sufficiency of food grains. And that is where we have created the grain revolution to such an extent that today we are feeding the world by our agri products. This is what benefit we have been able to get after independence. This is the jumping up of our Indian economy. During this phase, what actually happened is the government, first of all, nationalized 14 biggest commercial banks. Why? Because banks were giving loans to the business people because they were getting more interest from business people. But the money was required by the agriculturists to buy seeds, to buy fertilizers, etc. Banks were not giving. And therefore, government nationalized those banks, and the priority was that more and more loans have got to be given to the agriculture. That was the aim, to accelerate bank lending to agriculture at the time when big business cornered large chunks of the credit flow. So, movement of the credit from the business to the agriculture was the primary objective of the nationalization of the banks. Again, at that period, our currency was devalued. And the devaluation of the currency led to rising of our fiscal deficit of the government. Now, what is fiscal deficit? Fiscal deficit means that we imported food grain which we could not pay for that. That became a deficit. We have got to make that payment at a future date. So, it created a fiscal deficit for the country. Government was really in a hot soup at that time. India's external debt nearly doubled from 35 billion at the end of 84-85 to 69 billion by the end of 1991. Try to understand here. If you take a loan of 100 rupees, suddenly you find that you have got to pay 200 rupees for that. What would be your thinking? What would be your situation when you did not have the capacity to give back the loan of 100 rupees? You will be asked to give 200 rupees now. That is the same situation our government had to face at that time. Our debt doubled, but we did not have the capacity in terms of foreign exchange earnings to repay that debt. And from independence 1947 to 1991, the successive governments promoted protectionism policy. All economic activities were protected to benefit certain groups. With extensive state intervention and economic regulations, everywhere you had license Raj, inspector Raj, everything being controlled by licenses, by regulations, etc., etc. As individuals, as businessmen, agriculturists also, your hands were tied by all these factors. And this was a real havoc which was sustained by our country during that period. We came to a high level in 1990 and 91. Foreign exchange totally dried up to the extent that we could have foreign exchange barely for 3 weeks of imports. We could not repay the debt, even interest we could not repay. And that was the time when the foreigners, when they started demanding their money with interest, and we did not have the money. We had barely 3 weeks of foreign exchange for imports, and our basic imports during that time was oil required in large quantity, crude oil for petrol and diesel. And gold was as it is, we wanted gold. We were crazy about gold. the situation was so very bad that our government had to mortgage 20 tons of gold for $240 million just to keep our economy afloat at that particular point of time. And the end of the Cold War and the acute balance of payment crisis in 1991, this has led to the adoption of a broad economic liberalization in India. And this liberalization in India, which has happened in 1991, gave us a quantum jump because of the initiative of the government at that time. Mr. P.V. Narasimha Rao became the Prime Minister, and Dr. Manmohan Singh, I would say Dr. Manmohan Singh is the main person who is the architect of the buildup of our economy up to this particular stage. It is Dr. Manmohan Singh. Dr. Manmohan Singh before that was the governor of the Reserve Bank of India. He was asked to become the finance minister when Dr. Narasimha Rao became the Prime Minister. And between the two of them, they took such policy decisions to come out of this economic situation. They announced a series of policies and changes. The face of the Indian economy on three matters, three words, that's all. First, liberalization, second, privatization, and three, globalization. That first, liberalization means liberate the economy from the license raj, from the inspector raj, remove them as far as possible. Privatization means let the private entities enter the economy and build up the economy. Free hand was given to private entrepreneurs. And globalization, that means we should now go out into the global market in terms of foreign trade, increase our exports and control the imports. These were very big reforms created at that time. And these reforms have helped the country get freedom from the tough bureaucratic systems. And it has opened the doors for a vast number of opportunities, and so much so that foreign finances started coming into India. And when those foreign finances started coming, we could start developing our economy on a sounder footing. After that, we had another global crisis in 2007 and 2008. And this was not a crisis made in India. This was a great recession on account of an epic financial and economic collapse that brought down the whole of Wall Street, European and American markets, share markets, brought down the share market to its knees. It was the result of the bankruptcy, largest bankruptcy in United States history. That is collapse of the Lehman Brothers. Lehman Brothers were supposed to be the biggest as far as the economy is concerned, as far as trading is concerned in foreign exchange, trading is concerned in shares. And a bankruptcy was declared by the Lehman Brothers, which created a havoc not only in America, but throughout the world. That was the worst crisis that anybody could see in 2007 and 2008. Of course, in India, we were less impacted because our exports accounted only 15% of the GDP. Other than that, everything was our local sale and imports. So impact on us were less as compared to Europe and America. They were relying more on imports and exports on very large scales. So it hurt them more than it hurt us. Looking to the crisis, India took stimulus measures, both fiscal measures and monetary measures, to boost growth and generate demand so that economy could circulate. We had to focus on public sector reforms. After 1991 reforms, this is the second stage where again we hit upon further reforms as far as the public sector is concerned. That is, public undertakings were concerned. Infrastructure, agriculture, rural development, removal of land regulations, financial inclusions. These were all sectors where we took drastic reforms, and economic growth revived, leading to spur in private investment and exports, education and public health. This is where, by taking the measures as adopted by the government to overcome this crisis, we started growing economically. Next stage, of course, was the demonetization, and GST both created a havoc. But luckily, we came out of these two crises very fast. What is demonetization? On November 8, 2016, government declared that 500 and 1,000 rupee notes would not be legal tender. Overnight, they were banned. This announcement shook the country, everyone from a small vendor to a high-profile businessman, they were all affected because everybody had those notes, 500 and 1,000 rupee notes. Look at the situation. I want to go and purchase something tomorrow morning. I've got a 500 rupee note in my pocket, and tonight it has been declared that there is demonetization. This 500 rupee note is banned. Its value has become zero. I cannot go and purchase what I want tomorrow at all. That was a havoc with everybody. But we could sustain ourselves, and we have come out of that demonetization. I will not be able to judge. It is for you to judge whether we have come out positively or negatively. That is only time will tell us on this particular situation. Next, we got GST, Goods and Service Tax. Just months after this demonetization, government passed a bill on GST. Now, what is GST? A group of 14 local taxes, including specific municipal taxes, you call entertainment tax, all of those taxes, including sale tax, central sale tax, state sale tax, they were all combined into a group, a basket, which was called GST. Goods and Service Tax. This has led economy to slow down because it was a shock for the entire business community. 2017, when this was declared, the business people, they were all in shock. Uncertainty prevailed everywhere. These two were again crises. Thank you.